So with that, we will dive into the presentation. If you're on this call today, you're interested in opportunities for community college administrators to go to Russia. My name is Sarah Kozer. I'm an outreach and recruitment specialist. I'm very honored to work on this program. I think it's a very unique program that really focuses on our community college administrators. I think it fits a very nice niche within the Fulbright realm. I'm very honored also to be joined by a wealth of knowledge on this call, and so I'll go through the names. They will each have a few slides that they'll be discussing today, but first and foremost, I'd like to welcome my colleagues at IIE, Cecilia Kaczynski-Mulder. Would you like to introduce yourself real quick?
Sure. My name is Cecilia Kaczynski-Mulder. I work at IIE here in the Eurasia Program Management Team, working on the Russia CCAS program.
Perfect. And then we also are joined by Joel Erickson. Joel, would you like to say hello?
Sure. Hello, everyone. I'm Joel Erickson. I've been based in Russia for over 20 years, most of them working on exchange programs between the United States and Russia. So I'm very glad to be here. I've been with IIE. I've been with the Fulbright program for 7 years now.
And then we're also very happy to welcome Allison Blizzard. She is a former participant in, apologies for the dog, in the CCS program, and she's located at Portland Community College. Allison, would you like to say hello?
Yes, hello. So, yes, I'm at Portland Community College, and I was part of the cohort of 2019. I'm currently the director of the Office of International Student Services at Portland Community College, and I'm happy to be here today. Thank you.
Wonderful. And throughout the presentation, this session is being recorded. We will have time at the end to answer any and all questions you might have, so feel free to submit them throughout the duration of the presentation. But for now, we will dive into this session. So a quick overview of the Fulbright Scholar Program and the Fulbright Program in general is it was established in 1946 by Congress. The program itself is the government's flagship international educational and cultural exchange program, and to this day it is still sponsored by the U.S. Department of State with funding provided by the U.S. government. And IIE, the Institute of International Education, is very pleased to administer this program on behalf of the U.S. government. The program itself works in partnerships with 160 countries worldwide. This particular opportunity allows administrators the opportunity to go overseas, and you'll see the options are to 7 different countries through these seminar programs, but today we're just focusing on the program specifically to Russia. And the mission of the program, which is really important for anyone interested in applying to really resonate with, is it is to foster mutual understanding between nations, advance knowledge across communities, and improve lives around the world. And we will see, as you start to apply for any Fulbright program, that this is very important to address in your application to why that is important to you as an applicant to participate within Fulbright. Another thing we always like to highlight is that diversity and inclusion is very important to the Fulbright Scholar Program. We do have our diversity statement, which is listed on this screen as well as on our website. That these opportunities, we want to make sure we are opening opportunities to the best and brightest that the United States has to offer, but we also want to make sure it's inclusive of everyone within the United States giving these opportunities to go abroad on a Fulbright. So if you have any questions about our diversity and inclusion, please feel free to ask. We do also like to quickly dive into the numbers just to show the true breadth of the Fulbright program. It funds over 8,000 awards annually between the scholar and student programs themselves. For these seminars, they're listed in that first bullet point. So they make up part of those 800 U.S. scholars and administrators going over abroad annually. You can see that we're getting very close to almost 400,000 Fulbrighters as alums within this program. And so if you are welcomed into this Fulbright family, you'll be in good hands with a lot of amazing participants across the years. Quickly just showing the breadth within that scholar program, those 800 awards. You can see how those awards ended up being divided for the 2018-19 cycle. The little green piece of the pie listed on this slide makes up about 9%, and those are the administrators. And that tends to stay pretty much at that same size and scope year in and year out. But the other opportunities that you can see through the Scholar Program allow for teaching, research, the combination of the two, and then there are opportunities within Fulbright for postdocs. And so while you may be here interested in the seminar opportunities, feel free to share with your colleagues at your institution these opportunities as a whole to become part of the Fulbright program. So diving into what we're discussing today for the Community College Administrative Seminar, the CCAS, it's part of a larger program which tends to be wrapped up in the words of the International Education Administrator Seminars. And as I said earlier, these seminars, both the IEAs and the CCAS program, take place in 7 different countries around the world. For this current cycle that we're recruiting for the 2021 to 22 cycle, we're actually only recruiting for 5 countries, and you can see them listed on this screen. For your knowledge across the board, these seminars take place over the course of 2 weeks, and each country is really looking for a very unique profile, and we'll dive into exactly what the CCAS program to Russia is looking for in just a few minutes. The seminars as a whole are really intended to have a broad personal and professional impact on grantees, and from this experience, you can hope to expect that your home campus will also benefit from the increased knowledge of the host country's higher education system. I know Joel and Allison will both dive into that as well during their slides coming up. This program also aids in the development of programming as well as international student advising and a broader global collaboration. Additionally, as a grantee, you'll be able to also broaden your network with possible partnerships and cooperations through the other Fulbright grantees that are with you on these seminars, as well as other alumni that you may get in touch with. It's really important for you as an applicant to think of your application not only as a personal application, but also in relation to your university. So it's not just this personal application, but please think more broadly that this application should aim to increase institutional internationalization. So they go very much hand in hand, so just think about both aspects as you are working on your application. Diving into the eligibility of the U.S. Scholar Program, across the board, you must be a U.S. citizen in order to apply. For this program in particular, a PhD or terminal degree is not required, so you do not need to have that PhD or terminal degree. But as I said earlier, each award is really looking for a very unique profile. So each award will designate your professional experience and accomplishments that you should have in order to be eligible. And that is coming up, I do promise. And each award does have their own additional requirements outside of what you see on this screen. This last bullet point that talks about new policies on previous Fulbright Scholar grants, there is a 2-year waiting period between grants, but you can have more than one Fulbright in your lifetime, but just keep in mind there's a 2-year waiting period between those. And if you were interested in this program as well as a teaching and research opportunity through Fulbright Scholar, you can only choose one award in a cycle to apply to. So just keep that in mind as you are trying to determine the best award for you. And with that, we're going to quickly dive into what this Russia CCAS program is looking for, and I'm going to pass the reins over to Cecilia to tell you more.
All right. Thank you, Sarah. And so, you know, everyone's here today to talk about the Russia Community College Administrators Seminar Program, and this is really a great opportunity for community college administrators to look to widen your scope in all the ways that Sarah had mentioned before. So as far as the individual profile of the scholar, we're looking for someone who has a minimum of 5 years' experience in community college administration. As I mentioned, it's open to community college and community college affiliates. The deadline is November 2nd, 2020, and then the grant dates will be taking place in April 2022. If you've been sort of watching the program or watching the award that as it's been offered, you'll notice that this is a bit of a shift in that now we're going to be kind of looking a little ahead a little bit further. You know, the community college audience is you know, very important in Russia, which Joe will talk about how this kind of came about. But if you know, as a community college administrator, this is really a great opportunity for you, and we wanted to make sure that it was highlighted here just because you may not have applied for something like this in the past. And I also want to just put in a plug, because we were talking about the U.S. Scholar Program itself, is that there is a community college faculty award available in Russia as well. So if you do have colleagues on your campus who are looking for a great opportunity, you know, we have that available as well. And there are other awards in our catalog that are open to community college faculty as well. So definitely promote the Fulbright program, but Russia's commitment to the community college, you know, audience, I think is a very distinct and unique part of their offerings. So I think I'm going to be turning it over to Joel, but Sarah knows best. So.
You got it right. Joel, would you like to talk a little bit more about and elaborate on what Cecilia was mentioning and any key points you would like to focus on?
Sure. Be my pleasure. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. I'm really excited that there is so much interest in the community college program. I'll start first by echoing Cecilia in encouraging all of you who know faculty who might be interested in coming to have them apply. We don't get as many applications as we would like, and I would like to also emphasize that a person need not have a PhD, just experience as an instructor at a community college in order to apply. So be sure you emphasize that, because a lot of people think that if you don't have a doctorate, you can't be a part of this program, and that's not true at all. Regarding, in particular, the Community College Administrator Seminar, it's been operating now for over 10 years. And I've been with it now. This would be my eighth season coming up. And my experience has been that there's really a great deal of co-interest areas of collaboration possible because of this program. I think that our community college system maybe has been overlooked for years as playing a vital role in international education, at least by countries outside the United States, but the interest is growing all the time. For Russia, they have lots of reasons in particular to be interested. One, that they're also working hard to internationalize their campuses. They're doing much to create English language opportunities on their campuses. And thirdly, at least, for Russia, they're at a time due in part to demographics where there's more places available at Russian universities than there are places to fill them. So they're looking at the community college model in the United States as really interesting because of the two-track opportunities that we've offered, either for people who would like to work within the community college to earn the opportunity to go straight into a profession, and the others who are interested in going to a community college, seeing it as a gateway to entering a four-year university, though with a great savings in costs and tuition, and all the advantages that community colleges, which focus completely on teaching, can give a student, plus all the things that community colleges do as services for students who are coming into a system maybe not English language ready, is also very interesting for them. So this opportunity for the administrators to come to this intensive, and I mean it is very intensive because it's a very packed 2 weeks, including at least three Russian cities, almost certainly Moscow, where you would, if you were there, you would be having a meeting at the U.S. Embassy to be part of your program. But you're having a lot of visits that involve, if you look at the picture on the right hand of your screen, either sort of a seminar setting, where you are interacting with your counterparts who are experts on the Russian educational system and talking about how vocational training fits into the overall system, as well as doing some Blue Horizon kind of discussions on possibilities for cooperation and the sort of things in particular that the community colleges that you represent can do. Then we spent quite a bit of time, as you'll see in the lower photo, actually touring either Russian equivalents of community colleges or four-year universities, many of which are now taking in community colleges, or whether the equivalent of community colleges, under their wing so that they can develop students who are ready to come into the university setting after a couple of years of Russian vocational college experience. Here, by the way, you'll see in that lower picture what looks like a medical facility, and this is one of the areas that I think is a huge amount of co-interest is nursing and the way it's taught at U.S. community colleges. But that's not all. Our community college seminar is visiting forestry universities, agricultural vocational schools, all sorts of different places. You'll see, for example, the gentleman who's standing with a vest and a light-sleeved shirt on the left side of the screen with his arms crossed, that's Warren Brown, the president of Seattle North College. And Warren actually set up a program after he'd met a Fulbright alum who works in the area of international education on his campus, and they've created a joint rocketry project that would literally be launching a co-built satellite into space. So the possibilities for cooperation across this community college Russian counterpart platform are really great and exciting. And I think that Allison, when she speaks, can say more about her perspectives on this, but I welcome her to do so because I think that, you know, the bilateral relationship, let's face it, is not good between the U.S. and Russia in general. But that doesn't mean that a lot of great things can't happen anyway. And I think this is an example, almost like the example of the U.S. and Russia working together with their space agencies, where, you know, when you get really great professionals in a room together, I don't think it really matters what their citizenship is. I think they can come up with really progressive things to do that move the world forward. And I'll leave it at that. I'm looking forward to reading as many applications as possible from all of you. I hope you'll be interested to apply. And we look forward to seeing whoever ends up coming. I can guarantee you we'll give you a great program. Olga Petrova is joining us today. She basically plans your program. I've been really proud to work with her in Russia. She has many years of experience working with delegations going in both directions. And so, you know, I can tell you that the office is very well staffed and very, very professional, and I'm really proud to work with everybody in that office. And I'll leave that at that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Joel, and it's a pleasure to have both you and Olga on this call. It will very much come in handy, especially when we get into the question portion. So, again, I will plug and urge everyone to think of any questions you might have because you have a lot of great advice on this call to answer them today. Moving right along. So earlier I did show you a slide that this cycle we're recruiting for 5 different countries. There's 7 in total that have a similar model to the IEA and the CCAS structure. And across the board, even if you're considering a research or teaching opportunity, you might want to know what is the best method for me to select the right award. And so there are a few bullet points on this screen that are questions you really should ask yourself. How has your campus been working to internationalize itself? Are there certain countries that you are hoping to create bilateral exchanges with or increase those efforts and connections with, as Joel was talking about? Does your institution have a plan to increase the cooperation with one of these particular countries that we are recruiting for in general? Is that of interest for your internationalization plan on your campus for, let's say, the year 2025? And then additionally, you might ask yourself if your institution does have goals to increase the number of students from any of these particular countries. If you say yes to any of these questions, you might figure out this might be a really good option for you to really move forward in those plans and bring that knowledge back to your institution. On the personal scale, you might ask if you've had any professional experience with one of these countries. We do say if you've had more than within, a 5-year period, a 6-year period, if you've had extensive experience in that country for a very long time, it might not be the right country for you, but let's say you've just had, you know, a personal vacation to one of these countries, that won't count against you. And so I want to get that kind of out of the way. And I know Joel can highlight this a little bit more of what Russia is looking for. And then the last thing you'll want to ask is, what is your professional profile and does it match with one of these countries? Do you have the 5 years of experience that Russia is looking for in your position. So those are the types of questions you'll want to ask yourself in order to ascertain what is the right award for you. On this slide, as I said, this session is being recorded. I will send it out to everyone who has registered, as well as the PDF version of this PowerPoint, so you can click all of these hyperlinks. But we want to let you know that we do have a lot of resources at your disposal on our website. So our website is one of the best resources for you. There's a lot of information that really helps you walk through the application, as well as the catalog of awards. And I'll make a quick plug here that we have done a previous webinar that is on our website, which is an application walkthrough that actually walks you through submitting your application and any questions you might have. So I really encourage you to use those resources on our website. We do have an application guideline that, again, walks you step-by-step through the different components of the online application, which really is not a difficult application by any means, but we want to just make sure you have all those tools at your disposal. And with that, the last piece is connect with Fulbright. If you are interested in any of these opportunities that we're talking about, we do have something called My Fulbright, where you can actually register your name, your email, and your interest, be it in a discipline, be it in a certain world region or country. You can actually put that in to make sure you stay up to date on any information, and then you will get emails at the start of every competition and throughout the duration of that competition letting you know what are opportunities available for you. And so I really recommend that everyone should register on My Fulbright. So quickly diving into the application components before we bring Allison in for her perspective, you can see on the screen what is requested of you for these applications. But as a whole, there's an online application system through Slate. It will ask your biographical data as well as which awards you're applying to. And the reason it's very important for you to say you're interested in IEA, put the award country and that specific award number, is the application does morph on the back end, so it's only asking you the appropriate information. So if you happen to forget to put that you're interested in the IEAs, you're going to start to get questions about course syllabi and some other interesting components that you're not seeing on this screen. So it's very important that you do select that you're interested in the IEA to start with. Seminar details. This is actually really new for this year in a way. Previously, if anyone on this call or is listening to this recording has ever applied for one of the IEAs, what you will notice first and foremost is a difference here. So previously, we used to ask for a 5 to 6 page statement of intent that you would fill out. We are still asking for that in a way, but instead, moving forward, it's 5 open-ended questions, and those questions talk about your professional biography, your country selection and professional relevance, the outcomes and impact of this opportunity, your professional qualities, and then the last one is just an open-ended additional information section should you wish to fill that out. And I believe I will, on one of our other webinars, we do dive into each one of these directly, and if you do have questions, we can go over that as well. But do keep in mind that these are all very important. They're exactly what we used to ask in that full PDF document of 5 to 6 pages. However, we have broken them out this year to allow for you to really focus on these questions. So I do think it's in the applicant's favor how we have changed this. So I do hope this will be of benefit to you. So just keep in mind with all of these questions, it's your opportunity to explain your specific strengths as a candidate to the reviewers and the potential host. And as Joel says, they also read these applications, so just keep that in mind. It must be clear and compelling to audiences both inside and outside of your field, so you'll want to make sure that that really does resonate across different reviewers. The next piece that you will upload is your CV, which is 6 pages. It should be clearly organized and tailored to show how your credentials and professional standings and accomplishments relate to international education specifically. It should include your employment history, listing all items chronologically, starting with the most recent. And again, as I said, our website and the seminar instructions really do walk you through each one of these and tell you exactly what to include. So please, please, please utilize the website to help you on these applications. The next piece is your institutional statement, and all of the IEAs and the CCAS seminars do require this. And what you should include in this, again, is on the website, but it should include the general information about your home institution, the type of institution, being a community college in all of your cases if you're interested in Russia. But are you an MSI as well? Are you a rural community college? That's the type of information that they're looking for, in addition to total enrollment numbers, the numbers of degrees that you do offer. If you do have international students on your campus, where are they coming from? And then on the reverse of that, if you do have study abroad opportunities available on your campus, where are those to, and how many students participate in those annually? Other things that you can include are institutional partnerships, particularly with universities within the country where you're applying to. So if your institution does have partnerships in Russia, please list those in this institutional statement as well. And then lastly, I did mention, you know, future internationalization goals for campus. If your campus does have these future goals and plans for internationalizing the campus, please also address that in this institutional statement. Before I go into the letters of reference, one pro tip I always have as you're asking for these letters of reference is to provide them with a copy of those seminar details, those five open-ended questions, so they are aware of the type of program you're applying to and what you have put forth, so they can reference that as well. So diving into the letters of reference, this is the second place where you will notice a difference from previous years. So this year, you are only required to upload two letters of recommendation. These recommenders evaluate your professional qualifications and the potential for institutional impact. They will also discuss your personal qualifications and qualities. And so you might be wondering who can actually serve as these recommenders. They can come from a variety of people. However, one must be from your current supervisor or someone you report to at your institution, and they should really be familiar with your administrative skills and leadership success. While the other letter can come from any colleague who can speak to your personal attributes and interests within international education, they can also be either at your current institution or another institution. So that one is a little more varied on who that can come from. So just think about who would serve as the best reference writer for you. When you do log into the application, and I highly encourage everyone to do that as soon as they are interested and know that they wish to apply, so we can send you updates and messages to help you along the way, you will register your recommenders in the online system. So you do not upload their references. You will register their name and their email. The system will actually send an email to them that they can log in through that portal and submit what they need to. So just keep that in mind. I always encourage everyone to, once they know they're going to apply, register your references right away so they get the most amount of time ahead of the deadline to submit what they need to for you. Keep in mind, you can submit your application before these references submit their portion, or you can submit it after they submit their portion. That does not matter. It doesn't hinge on the other. But do keep in mind that the application and all references should be submitted by the deadline, and they all should be in English. So quickly diving into the timeline before I pass the reins, the deadline is coming up in November. It's November 2nd, 2020. It's usually on the 1st, but we never have a deadline on a weekend, so just keep that in mind. You should be notified in December whether or not your application is moving forward, and so you'll be notified whether or not it's been recommended or not recommended, so it'll go through one review period there here in the United States. And then if your application is recommended, it then will go over to Russia. That's where Joel and his team will kind of come to that, and they will notify you in April of 2021, so next year, whether or not you are a finalist. And as Joel and as Cecilia said, this program isn't taking place until April of 2022. So there will be a lot of lead-up time for them to work with you and really develop a really robust programming for you. And with that, I'm happy to finally give the reins to Allison to really talk about her experience on this program. Allison?
Yes, well, thank you so much. I'll just start off with a little bit about my background. I am a U.S. citizen, but I lived in Germany for about 17 years of my life. I studied in Germany, got my master's and PhD there. But I am a community college graduate and a first gen. So, you know, life takes you in many different directions. So in applying for the Fulbright, I had, you know, had experience with Europe through my various positions that I've had at community colleges and universities. I've been connected with international education in one way or the other, both as faculty and administrator. But I had had not had the privilege yet of having any close contacts or programs with Russia. And at Portland Community College, we have the potential for those connections. We have a Russian language program that's been there for quite a few years. Our engineering and business departments are very strong and open to and you know, looking for connections internationally. So this seemed to be a good fit to be looking toward to Russia. And that's part of the reason I applied for that particular program. We also have a lot of, as most of the folks who are on this call probably have something similar, we have a lot of technical programs, and that was very attractive to me that this was not only being able to meet with Russian universities, but also with technical colleges. So that's kind of where I started. I can say, just to kind of hop back to the what you were just hearing about the application process, it is a well-organized process, and I did have a lot of questions. I reached out. I know I spoke with Cecilia, and so I would encourage you to touch base and attend the webinar as you're doing. Look at the website. Ask questions. They are super helpful in making sure that and getting your questions answered and making sure you're kind of on the right track with your application. So I found that super helpful. Moving into what my grant experience was like, I can only give the highest praise for this program that is in great part due to the super organization and care that Joel and Olga put into this. From the moment I found out that I was going to be part of this program, there were connections were made, also with the other administrators in my cohort. There were four others. They were all East Coast community colleges, and I was the only one on the West Coast. But we were able to connect with each other before we even left. We put together some general kind of presentation materials because we knew that part of what we would also be doing was talking about what our institutions do, not just learning from the others, but it's really an exchange. We're really telling others about, in general, community colleges, and then we do get the opportunity to talk about our individual institutions. So connecting with your cohort members ahead of time, I think, was invaluable. And, you know, every cohort is probably a little different. I was the only woman in our group, and we all worked together really well. So that was, very different backgrounds. One of our members in our cohort was a VP, others were deans, I'm a director, but we're all administrators. So just wanted to add that part there. And you're looking at this slide here, what did we do? What are my takeaways? Well, as you saw in the first slide, I fell in love with not just Moscow, but Russia. There's my I love Moscow. But back to this second slide. And the reason, I guess, part of the reason I fell in love with it was this program, we did a lot, but we weren't just rushed through. We were also able to make personal connections with other administrators and faculty. The hospitality with which we were greeted at every institution was phenomenal. They were excited to have us. We were excited to be there. That feeling of being welcome and really being able to talk with folks, and not just here's a presentation and let's move on, but being able to connect both in formal and informal settings was really wonderful. So professionally, what has come from this is, our college is dedicated to internationalization. Part of my position is geared toward that. Coming back, we have not yet. Unfortunately, we do not have have been able to put anything in place like the one that Joel mentioned in Seattle, the Seattle College. But I am working with faculty and deans on some of the ideas that we took away there about student and faculty exchanges, as well as things like collaborative online international learning, so COIL, or other kinds of ways that we can use technology to provide guest lectures and things like this. Because really what's particularly important about this is that we didn't just meet with the international offices of these different institutions that we were at. We met with faculty and program administrators as well. So being able to look at, can we connect our engineering department with one of the engineering programs of the institutions that we met with, or construction was another one. And just looking at this slide here, I just wanted to point out that we were at, in these 2 weeks, we were in at the Kochovi Center in Pushkin. We were in Gatchina. Then we met at 5 institutions in St. Petersburg, 2 institutions in Tver, 2 institutions in Moscow, not to mention the embassy and the EdUSA Center. So it's a packed 2 weeks. Olga tells you ahead of time that you need to wear comfortable shoes, and she's not kidding. We really did put a lot of miles on our shoes there. But in that moving around, you can see some of the from the pictures here. There were more official meetings, but also being able to go into, you can see the construction picture there. That was in Tver Technical College. So that wide breadth of being able to meet with folks from different institutions, some that were quite similar to our vocational programs and others at the universities. And then we go to the next slide. Here, just a couple of pictures. That was from the Kochovi Center and also the Catherine Park and the Catherine Castle there. And then, of course, Red Square. So there were a lot of things that we did. We saw also, we got a private tour of the Hermitage in St. Petersburg. So there were things where it wasn't just meetings. In between the meetings, we were able to really have time to learn about the country, learn about these beautiful cities that we were in, and that was wonderful. And then slide 3, of course, culture goes through food. So you see us here with our donuts and coffee at a place, I believe we were in St. Petersburg there, and then also a tea museum we visited and got a traditional tea ceremony, and learned so much about the area and so on. And so I can't say enough about how robust, how comprehensive this program is. One thing I would say is that my expectation when I came back was that everyone at my college would be exactly as excited and on fire as I was, because I got to, I was living in that moment. It takes time. So I am working with deans and faculty on ideas, but I would like to just say to not be discouraged, that things may not take off immediately. It takes time, and of course now we have had this COVID interrupt all of our lives and everything that we're doing at our institutions. Your institution may be faced currently with challenges where they just feel like there's not the capacity for something like this. I would encourage you to just remind your VPs or upper administrators the support that you need there, to say that this is not necessarily something that is one and done. It's not just go for 2 weeks, come back, put together a student exchange program, and you're done, but to look at this as a long-term program that that you can continue to foster these relationships and to build onto that. That's something that's happening with me, and so I'm looking not only at how I can connect these possibilities for more collaboration or program development, not only with Portland Community College, but I'm also a board member of Northwest International Educators Association, and I'm part of Study Oregon, so looking at expanding that reach. And I know these are difficult times, but I would encourage everyone to really pursue this, because we will get through these difficult times, and we will, expand our view, and our colleges will bounce back. And being able to have this experience is really invaluable. So I think I've talked enough, and if there are questions, I would be happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Allison. That's so insightful, and just wrapping it kind of up and letting people know the challenges that you faced upon returning, I think is great. But we're very excited for the future of your connections, and we can't wait to hear about how those all pan out. All right, so before we do dive into the questions, we always like to make a plug at the end of every webinar for any upcoming webinars. We do hope you are interested in the CCAS opportunity to Russia, but in case you were interested in any of the other upcoming webinars to any of the other countries, we do have Korea later this week, and then Germany and France will take place in December. And just keep in mind that all the IEAs and the CCAS awards have varying deadlines, so just keep that in mind. And with that, you can see our email address listed on the screen. I am in there, so if you have any questions, please reach out. If you need us to look at your CV to see if this is the right fit, again, send that my way. I'm happy to take a look at it. I'm happy to set up an advising call with anyone who is interested in this program. I think as you can take away from this session, that there's a lot of people interested and really hopeful for some really great applicants to come through this cycle. But with that, we do have Chinny, my colleague Chinny, on the background with questions. Chinny, can we open up the questions for the group?
Yes, so we do have the questions here. And also, everyone, feel free to continue to write in your questions. Let's see. So the first question that we have is that I have an IEA from 2018. Can I apply for the one in Russia?
So from 2018, sorry, I have to think this through. I believe you would be eligible to apply at this point. I believe you're two. It depends on when your IEA grant ended, as long as there's 2 years between that and then this application deadline of November 2nd, you would be eligible. So not exactly sure, because the IEAs all have different grant periods. As long as there's 2 years between that, you would be eligible. And if you do want to follow up with me, please feel free to reach out to IEA@IIE.org, and I'm happy to talk with you further.
All right. Our next question is this IA program for higher level administrators?
Yes, so this program, let's see if I can get back to the overview. So this program is really looking for administrators that have 5 years of experience. As Allison pointed out, she was on a program with directors, deans, and then Warren Brown, who is the president of his college. Joel, would you like to highlight a little bit more about kind of the specific professional profile that you're looking
sure.
for with this program?
I think, you know, for many of the persons who've been involved have been presidents or VPs, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't apply if you don't have that level. But I would say that we would prefer people who have a certain level to where they can feel confident about speaking about projects and things. It wouldn't be someone who feels like they have to return and get a whole bunch of approvals, I suppose, if they had ideas that they wanted to pursue. But strictly speaking, it's a fairly senior level position, I would say, and of course you have to have 5 years experience there.
Okay, thanks so much, Joel.
All right, let's see. So our next question is, would a faculty member with administrative responsibilities such as department chair be eligible?
Joel or Olga, would you like to chime in on that one?
I think I'd have to discuss that. I think it would depend. If that were allowed, the person would have to have a pretty significant level of administrative experience. I think it would really depend. I'd have to take that on more of a case-by-case basis, I think. But generally, you need to have 5 years of experience. We don't say full-time experience, but it would have to be a pretty significant portion of the last 5 years, at least, of your work.
For this particular case, if that applicant asking that question would like to submit their CV to us, I can absolutely share that with Joel, and we can have that discussion offline
sure.
and get back
That's
to
great.
You.
All right, so our next question is, let's see. This is almost a 2-year cycle from application to program. What happens if you are no longer with your institution at the time of the program?
So I can touch on this, and then I will definitely defer it to Joel for his take. But traditionally, as we highlighted, it's both a institutional and personal application. So they are reviewing you based on where you're at, and traditionally they do ask that you are ideally staying at that institution. From my past knowledge, for anyone that has transitioned institutions, we know it happens. It does go, and you, let's say you were awarded in that time, I believe that conversation would go back to Joel and Rasha, and they'd make that final decision whether or not that your new institution would also accommodate. But Joel, would you like to piggyback off of that with your take and if this has come up in the past? Oh, Joel, did we lose you?
I'm sorry, I just forgot to unmute that is. To my knowledge, I've not had a case like that. I'd want to look very carefully at the rules, but I think that based on the spirit of those rules, if the person wasn't still active in community colleges, I mean, if you switched employers and were doing the same thing, basically, with the new employer that you had with the old, I'd be willing to look at that application, but I would want to talk to my counterpart at ECA to make sure that you would remain eligible. I think you probably would, but I would want to double check.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe that's definitely a case by case, but we're happy to look into that, but we will get back to you if that is the case. Most likely, I would probably encourage you to wait if you know you were transitioning, to wait till you get to that new institution to think about applying, but please, again, reach out if you do have any questions.
All right, so our next question is another eligibility question. Does the 5 years experience include overall experience in the field, or is it focused on the current specific role?
Joel, I might have you weigh in on this one as well.
I think we should just put minimum 5 years experience in community college administration. Is that phrase not enough to answer the question?
I may not have understood.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Chini, was the question like within international education, whether or not it was at a community college? Can you repeat it one more time?
Yes. So the question is, does the 5 years experience include overall experience in the field, or is it focused on the current specific role? So I interpret this maybe as overall experience in the field pertaining to working at community colleges, maybe as a
I can answer,
teacher.
I think, if this is Cecilia. I mean, I was going to say, I would encourage the applicants to think of it as sort of like an aggregate of your experience, so you don't have to be in the past 5 years in this very same position, but if you've been in community college administration in different different ways, you can kind of put that amount of time together to make up the experience. But I would say if you're not sure if you fall within that category, to reach out to Sarah, and Sarah can take a look at your CV and weigh in. But I would look at it as an aggregate amount of time, not just the current position.
Perfect. Thank you, Cecilia.
Right. So our next question is, at what point does the Moscow office think it will have the specific cities or institutions for this program available? Is COVID creating special problems?
Well, that's a,
Joel
great,
or Olga.
That's a great question. We've just changed the program. You know, it's 2022, and so I wouldn't. We will only make that answer available when we know ourselves, and we don't currently know where the 2022 cohort would go. I think that with that long of an advanced planning frame, and with the dynamics of the Russian situation, I think it's worthwhile for us to wait. And then also, given that we have more time, we would like to select the finalists and then look carefully at your interests and maybe what your colleges have done internationally even to decide what would be the best place to go. But in general, because of the time zones differences, you already have a very stressful travel schedule, we don't see it as realistic to go to, say, the Far East. And generally, we don't even go to Siberia for that reason. Maybe we would go to Western Siberia, which has many great institutions. It's just that can be too much travel. So it's really pretty unlikely that we'll go west or east, that is, of the Urals. But to be more specific than that, I really can't answer that question right now.
This is Olga. I would like to quickly add that, COVID really presented quite a few challenges for us, because earlier we would really know far in advance where we are going. But as Joel said, we will be monitoring the situation because the Russian campuses, some of them also closed. So closer to the program days, so we'll have a better understanding. And plus, since we will have the program in April 2022, we will think that we'll take this time to really survey you and to identify your interests, what kind of schools you're interested in, what kind of, I don't know, areas of expertise, and then we will plan the program accordingly and include cities that will have all those opportunities that you are really interested in.
Or most of them, at least.
Thank you both.
All right, thank you. So our next question is, any suggestions for former finalists or alternates who were not ultimately selected but are still very interested?
That's a great question.
Yeah, it is a great question. There's real opportunities. I would look carefully at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow's website. and take a look at the grant opportunities that are available for institutions in the United States. We had one of our participants project that we did, Sanjay Rai, he actually had a couple faculty members apply for opportunities to the U.S. university, for U.S. universities and, or colleges, and both won sufficient funding from the U.S. Embassy to send small delegations to visit Russia in the summer, of composed of faculty members. One group is interested in African-American studies in Russia. Many of you may not be aware that a number of African-Americans moved to the Soviet Union in the 20s, many of them quite famous, and were there for significant amounts of time. And so this group is interested in researching and learning more about their experiences in the Soviet Union. Another group will go out to Lake Baikal. They're interested in the UN policy goals related to climate change and looking carefully at educational programming in the area of Lake Baikal, which is the world's largest repository of fresh water. So just right there, I can name two opportunities that are financed by the U.S. Embassy that would allow for people to build interesting projects. And, you know, I think by bringing out faculty member, you know, Allison's words really struck me that, you know, she was so excited when she went back. But, you know, it wasn't like they were waiting for her at the airport with big flags saying, well, you know, how was your trip to Russia, Allison? And, yeah, and so I think that if you get the opportunity to bring your colleagues over once you've had an experience with Russian institutions, have made some of your own contacts, you can really capitalize and do interesting things. And like I said, here's one example, funding from the U.S. Embassy. You know, I would seek out others. You might have opportunities within your communities maybe to get co-funding or to find other potentially community groups that are interested in internationalizing your campuses and would see something that's like this as something worthy of support. Thank you.
Can I jump in?
Absolutely. Thank you, Allison.
I just wanted to add to what Joel was saying that, you know, the times that we're in are different. And I know that a lot of the projects that we traditionally have looked at have included exchanges. So humans physically getting on planes and going to different places. And I hope that in the near future that will again really open up and be possible in a lot of ways. But I also know that a lot of community colleges right now are concerned and have a lot of budget concerns. And I think that one of the positives that is coming out of this COVID experience is that it is not unusual to do projects virtually. And so being able to use our technology to have, for example, guest lectures, of course it would be wonderful to physically go to Moscow and have a guest lecture or to collaborate with your colleagues there. But if that's not possible, be it because of COVID or because of other financial situations at your college, my experience with all of our partners in Russia was that they were very advanced with using technology to bring people together. So I just want to put that out there, that that's something that I'm especially looking at, is how we can do things possibly virtually, possibly low cost on all sides, and working toward that, and not just looking at traditional kinds of exchange programs and things like that.
And I'd like to add, I'm so thankful Allison brought that up, but I didn't think to bring it up myself, but now that she has, I realize that many of the conversations we've been having for the last few years during these seminars, you know, more and more I'm hearing people talk about joint taught courses. And I think that's a great idea because, and online joint taught courses, and this was coming up, of course, before the pandemic even hit us. But now that everyone's been forced to teach online, and now I'm seeing all sorts of possibilities that could occur and that would be very cheap and that wouldn't require any special co-taught courses don't require any kind of articulation agreements, and it's really a neat idea. Another thing that Allison's comments just triggered in me is to mention that another thing we learned, especially during our last seminar, was the degree to which many Russian universities are offering summer intensive language Russian courses that are incredibly cheap. So we're also seeing that as we visit Russian institutions that are trying to internationalize their campuses, that there are very inexpensive opportunities now to study Russian intensely during the summer months in Russia. So that also is an area that won't require much funding to support development.
Perfect. Thank you both so much for that. And just to bring it back for that question as well, what I want to add is if you are interested in applying again, reach out to my office, to my team. We'd be happy to look at your application, see if there's, again, additional feedback we can give on top of what Joel and Allison said, that maybe I always say in some cases the stars align and the correct year for you works out. So sometimes it's just a matter of submitting a couple times before you actually become a finalist. So just keep that in mind that, you know, not everyone gets it on that first try. I do know we are at time. So I want to be cognizant of that. Chimmy, did we have any other last-minute burning questions?
That answers all of our questions. Thank you.
Perfect. Well, if anyone does have questions, my email is on the screen. If you wish to ask any questions specifically for Joel and Olga or for Allison, send them my way, and I'll definitely forward them on your behalf. But I want to thank everyone on this call, Cecilia, Joel, Olga, and Allison. Thank you so much for your time joining in today, and for all of you attending, thank you so much, and we do hope to see your applications come through for this next cycle. All right. Well, with that, we wish you all well, and stay healthy during this time. Have a good one, everyone.